Tell people who live in our region that they might consider heading for the beach on really hot summer days, and the response will be something along the lines of, well, duh, our coastal zones are generally quite a bit cooler than the inland valleys. But the climate is changing for everyone, right? Yes, and the effects of climate change are not evenly distributed. We'll focus on the north coast of California. The area around Humboldt Bay has a few features that could well keep it somewhat cooler than places inland and further south. Michael Furness compiled a bunch of facts and figures on this. He's a lecturer in the Department of Forestry and Wildland Resources at Humboldt State University and retired from a long career with the U.S. Forest Service. Michael Furness, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, happy to be here.
You had a talk on this subject a couple times, actually, but a week before Christmas, I noticed at the Sequoia Park Zoo in Eureka. I understand it grew quite a crowd.
Yeah, there was kind of an overflow crowd and a lot of questions afterwards, so people are aware and interested.
Now, I want to point out up front, you're not saying no climate impacts. You're just saying somewhat less than other areas?
I'm absolutely not saying that there's no climate impacts, and I do have to, disclaim this. It's sort of like, you got the flu, but you didn't get the bubonic plague, or you got hit by a motorbike, but you didn't get hit by a truck. We will have impacts. We're seeing sea level rise impacts now, and some of those are quite serious and consequential. But overall, the coastal areas, especially where you're next to a large body of very cold water, are remarkably less than in some other areas. And, I really wanted to point this out when you teach about climate change, and I've taught in a number of places, including Humboldt State and at several universities in Vietnam and Thailand. And it's kind of an unrelenting bummer. It's one bad story after another. And those of you that follow the news, see there's new findings and new warnings and new sense of urgency and severity of this all the time. And those are real. I did want to point out that there are places and there are things that we depend on that aren't in as bad a shape as maybe some other places. And that's a useful thing for scientists and science practitioners to do.
Well, let me draw things out a little broader then. I mean, we're talking about the North Coast here. That is where you live and where you give these talks. But, I mean, is it pretty much any place close to the ocean is going to, or is there some, we're talking about some unique features for the Humboldt Bay region?
It's mostly any place close to a cold ocean. So the rain coast, the coast pretty much all the way up to Alaska and through the coast of Alaska are buffered by the Pacific Ocean and the proximity of the Pacific Ocean. Anyone that lives near the coast knows that it's cold, cool and wet here. And if it gets a little warmer, it's still going to be cool. And we have enough moisture that even in drought conditions, we kind of do okay for water. And in a lot of places, the water supply depends heavily on snow, and snowpack is the major form of water storage for our very dry summer. And we don't depend on snow on the coast. We have low mountains. We don't get a lot of snow, and we don't depend on snowpack, basically. So our water supplies are basically not in the same kind of trouble that the inland areas that depend on snowpack for their water supply are.
Well, I was going to ask if, what makes the effect of the ocean different in, say, Eureka from Santa Barbara or San Diego? And I think you've gotten halfway to answering that already, which is the difference in the ocean temperature itself.
Yeah, that's right, and the way the fog works, and just the general average temperatures overall. And then another reason I wanted to tell this story is that there's been a narrative out there that that the redwoods are highly vulnerable. Our beloved redwood forest is going to go away because of climate change and loss of fog. And really looked at this and talked it over with all the redwood ecologists I know, and it's just not the case. I will say that if the global average temperature goes up 3 or 5 plus degrees centigrade, all bets are off, and maybe we lose nearly everything. But the redwoods are probably one of the last forest types that you would worry about from climate change. We do worry about them because we value them so highly. They're perhaps the most valued forest type in the world, and we need to keep looking very hard at that. And there's three different university projects that are doing that, funded by Save the Redwoods League. There's very good evidence that redwoods are very resilient to climate change. And so I wanted to tell that story in contrast to some, I think, irresponsible predictions that the redwoods are in great peril and are going to blink out. That's just not the case.
Okay.
So it's a little piece of good news amidst an ocean of bad news on this topic.
Right. As you said, it's a sort of an unrelenting bummer when you talk about climate change, but not on the redwoods, at least from what you can see. Our guest is Michael Furness on the Jefferson Exchange. He is he's a lecturer in the Department of Forestry and Wildland Resources at Humboldt State University, not consistently, and was retired from a very long career at the U.S. Forest Service, talking about the North Coast as something of a climate refuge. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. Our phone number is 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I think you already mentioned a little bit about, you know, if the temperatures get really hot, there could be some trouble for the redwoods. But there is a history, at least, of the redwoods enduring big swings in precipitation, aren't there?
Yes, there is. And the drought that we had a few years ago, several years long of way less than normal or average precipitation, we didn't see any damage or diminution of the redwoods. And in fact, we can have like a third of our annual rainfall, and there's still enough to saturate our soils or basically fill the soil reservoir so that moisture that the trees and the plants depend on is there. Now, our streams can run very low, and that's hard on the salmon, so that's not something that we would not worry about. Yeah, and that's definitely a factor.
Okay, as we talk about the ocean, I mean, you're not refuting some of the things that other people have talked about. The ocean is getting higher, and of course, because of plate tectonics, we've also got subsiding land in the Humboldt Bay area, don't we?
That's right, and the Humboldt Bay area is tectonically subsiding faster than anywhere else on the California coast. And it's about as fast as the regional or global sea level rise rate. And so it's the actual sea level rise that we experience here is at the bay and just south of here is about double what you would normally have with a stable coast. Most coasts are not stable, but our coast is especially not stable and is it varies along the coast. As you go north from here, the coastline is actually rising and in some places kind of canceling sea level rise, but in Humboldt Bay, where you know most people live, it's dropping, and so there's a serious problem with sea level rise here.
Mm-hmm. And some areas likely to be lost to water, as we've been talking about for a few years now.
Yes, considerable areas and a lot of infrastructure, roads and pipelines and sewage treatment plants and whatnot. And we have a good vulnerability assessment now and kind of know what we need to do. Hasn't been much action yet. It's complicated, but we do have we can just simply back off. We have places to go. We're not like, for example, Bangladesh, where everything is lowland and there's nowhere to run. So it's a discrete problem, and we've taken big steps here to begin to solve that problem. But in terms of moisture and temperature, this is a pretty mild place. Some people say, we could do a little warming here.
Right. Well, let me ask about the interplay then, or the interconnection between moisture and temperature. I mean, 46 inches on average in a year in Eureka, which is above the national average, way above the California average, not drought immune, and obviously changes in the ocean and general conditions could change precipitation. If the precipitation becomes consistently less, I mean, could that exacerbate temperature rise?
Maybe a little bit, but they tend to be fairly independent. Mm-hmm. And there's been some suggestions in a couple of papers that there seems to be a trend for less fog. And I think that's really questionable. Those investigations didn't look at the enormous amounts of smoke that were emitted during the big timber years, when there were literally hundreds of teepee burners everywhere, right, and the clear-cut units were burned off and whatnot, and we think that was part of the data glitch. But there's good reason to expect that there'll be more fog, because the temperature difference between the inland areas and the coastal areas, which is what drives that onshore movement of wet air, is intensifying. So it's getting hotter faster in Redding, in the Central Valley, in the Rogue Valley, for example, than it is on the coast. And that increases that temperature difference, and that should drive more fog. Fog is complicated, and a number of people are looking at this, because it does matter for ecosystems.
For the redwoods, for example.
Yes, we actually think the redwoods are range is limited by temperature, and they really can't handle freezing temperatures. And the idea that they must have fog to survive is simply not the case.
Huh.
For example, in Napa County, there's lots of redwoods. There's no summer fog there. You can grow redwoods in Sacramento if you have sufficient soil water. There's no fog there. It's a little bit overplayed, I think.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. You know, I was going to ask you too, if the fog zone might change a bit, Michael. I mean, when you got a temperature creeping up just a little bit and some other adjustments and things. I mean, is where the fog hits likely to be different? Is the moist zone, as you head further east in Humboldt County, likely to change where it begins?
That's really unknown, and a lot of uncertainties with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's super variable anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we had one year a few years ago where we had more fog than we've ever seen. And then in the recent summer, it didn't seem like very much fog at all. So the ecosystems here are adapted to highly variable fog. And how that's going to play out with climate warming is still an open question, and there's a number of really good folks that are looking hard at that.
Michael Furness, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a sometime lecturer at Humboldt State University, retired from a career at the U.S. Forest Service. We're talking about the North Coast as a potential climate refuge, because the impacts of climate change, while there will be some, perhaps not as significant as in other parts of California. So let me ask this about, you know, we're not talking about huge changes, but are there any weather patterns the North Coast does not get now that might show up as climate changes?
That may be. I mean, there's some evidence that the jet stream is shifting to the north, which would leave us with less rainfall. Although overall, the globe is getting wetter. The warmer the atmosphere gets, the more water it holds. And it's about 6 to 7% for every degree rise in global average temperature.
Does this explain things like what happened with Hurricane Harvey and, you know, 50 inches of rain in 2 days?
Yes, what we're seeing worldwide is an increase in heavy precipitation, and you know, heavier rainfall, more intense rainfall than has been seen in the past or has been seen for a long time. How flood frequency will change with climate change is not calculable at this point, but we can see a trend for more heavy rain.
Mm-hmm. Any particular season that people on the North Coast, I mean, people who live there for a long time like yourself, I mean, things that any season that might show more changes than any other?
In this business of drawing distinctions, which is really all I'm trying to do here and what scientists have a responsibility to do, it depends on the resource or the sector or the value that you're worried about. But one of the things that's of probably a considerable consequence in the ecological setting is warmer low temperatures and longer growing seasons, and basically a change in how cold it gets in the winter. And you might think that's good, but it actually can really throw things off, the timing of migrations and just kind of how the whole system works.
I have noticed that, the discussion tends to focus around not so much the like the high temperatures in summer. Yeah, it gets mighty hot, but it has for a long time. But things like record high low temperatures for certain dates.
Yeah, so the low lows are getting higher, basically, as you might expect, and in some places, and I think that may be true here, that that is a more distinct effect than the high temperatures or the extreme high temperatures getting hotter. Now, in hot places, for example, in Redding or in tropical areas or, say, in Southeast Asia, the highs getting higher is really the big problem, and those areas becoming maybe even uninhabitable. But not so much here. So you hate to hear scientists say this, but it's complicated, and it depends on how you want to look at it and what you're worried about.
So, Michael, about 2 minutes left. What do people do with the information on the North Coast? You're not suggesting complacency, I think.
Hardly not, no. There shouldn't be complacency. Job one is to try to limit emissions as much as possible. And climate change is a slow process. We're looking out 50 or 100 years. But the emissions, reducing emissions, there's a great urgency for that. And when you hear the scientists lately saying it's time to really be concerned about this, many saying it's kind of time to panic. And that has to do with trying to keep the carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases out of the atmosphere and reduce those as quickly and as dramatically as we possibly can. Because once we put them up there, they stay there for a long time, and we're cooking in basically a lot of impacts in the future for our children and their children. And so that's the urgency, is to try to limit our emissions and change the way we do energy, transportation, and food, and all of that to try and protect this global commons of our atmosphere that we all depend on. Let me say one other thing about the redwoods, if we have time. They've been here for about 120 million years. And so they must have been through all sorts of climate swings. And their range expands and contracts. But where they must have persisted is right here next to the cold water, where it's cool and moist. And also, when we look at the global average temperatures back in deep time, beyond about 25 million years, the Earth was hotter, consistent. So for that whole time that the redwoods evolved, up until about 30 million years ago, it was hotter than it is now.
Well, as you point out, it's a level of comfort we get from this, but it's like the North Coast is going to get hit like any other place by climate change, more like getting hit by a motorbike than a truck, perhaps,
Exactly. Yeah. I just want people to relax about the redwoods and come and enjoy them and not think that that's just one more thing that we're probably going to lose.
Okay. Michael Furnish, thank you so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange. It is the bottom of the hour on the exchange.